Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm very excited for this week's show because we are gassing up the car with some nightmare fuel and talking about Return to Oz with Robin Buckley. Hi, Robin.
Hi. I'm happy to be here again for this movie.
I don't know how this happened. You have cornered the market on Kinder trauma when it comes to F This Movie, because we keep talking about The Dark Crystal. We did a whole episode just on Kinder trauma, and now we're talking about Return to Oz. So if anything like fucked us up as kids, you are the one to podcast about it.
Yes, and I am very proud to have that to my name. We should just start asking listeners to be like, tell us what movies they were, and we'll do it.
Yeah, really, just leave it in the comments, and that'll be our next show. We'll be movies that mess us up. We have to do another one of those where we make each other watch stuff soon, but we need just a more lead time for that. So,
yeah, those ones, there's a lot of prep on those.
I was excited to see Criterion announce All About Eve, though. That was one of the movies that you had me watch, and I really liked it. And now Criterion is putting it out, I'm guessing, because of our podcast.
Oh, of course. The fact that it wasn't already is surprising.
Shocking oversight on the part of the Criterion Collection.
Yes, very much so.
Shocking oversight. anyway, so we will be talking about Return to Oz in just a little while, but first, Robin, have you seen anything good lately?
I have. I've watched a few things. I finally got around and saw Destination Wedding.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it, I think, more than I expected to. I really like Winona Ryder and Keanu Reeves. Like, just their chemistry and the dialogue. And I don't think I realized going in that literally nobody else is there. Just, like, in the background, there's people, but does anybody else speak?
They have an interaction with the brother, right? Don't they have a brief interaction with the brother, or am I...
I don't even think they did. I thought it was
may
just, like...
I be misremembering that.
You see her go up and, like, hug him, okay, but you don't hear anything.
Okay.
The most... It's probably not the most awkward sex scene, but, like, really, like, I was uncomfortable watching
it. Is a pretty weird sex scene, yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, interesting. And I don't know, I mean, maybe, like, I can picture her playing that kind of character, but I don't know if I really had seen Keanu play that kind of character, or... I don't know. I guess I want him to do more kind of dialogue heavy, sarcastic parts. And I know he's now he has been an action star, but he's like John Wick. But I'm like, no, keep doing this other stuff too.
Well, I feel like so many of us have forgotten that he started out doing a lot of comedy. You know, he had the Bill and Ted movies, he had Parenthood, he had I Love You to Death. And then he kind of got away from comedy for years and years. And so when he comes along in Destination Wedding, it's like, oh, right, he has good comic timing and he knows how to do comedy. But it was almost like, how have we never seen Keanu Reeves do comedy before? Like, no, he became a star because of comedy. And I'm as guilty of that as anybody is, as feeling like, hey, how come he doesn't do more of these kinds of movies? And I don't even know what that would mean, because it's not like I want him to do more romantic comedy, because Destination Wedding is in many ways sort of an anti-romantic comedy.
Yeah, it's not like a typical rom-com kind of thing. Like, they're both pretty terrible people.
Right.
And I'm like, I mean, I don't think they're going to work out.
I have hopes.
You have hope?
I do. I want those two to be happy together.
Like, she might be a little too crazy.
He's pretty messed up too. That's
they're both really messed up.
Right. And that's part of the beauty of the film, is that these two damaged people sort of find each other and maybe will work together. Yes. In the real world, you are absolutely right. They're probably not going to work out, but in the movie universe, I like to think, they're going to live happily ever after.
Yeah. Maybe she'll get pregnant and have a boy. Cause that comes up repeatedly. And now I would like to see another movie with them that's not, you know, Dracula.
Maybe they could do like the Before series and just every 5 years come back to this couple and check in on them.
They're just getting more and more just like sarcastic with each other.
Hating the world more and more. Maybe they will just insulate themselves further and become more of a unit, and they're sort of misanthropes together.
You know, I'd watch that.
Me too.
I'd watch that. I'm also always happy to see Winona Ryder in things because she's great. And it's what she's had this, and then it's just been the Stranger Things series.
Yeah.
And I don't know what else recently.
Right. Yeah. She doesn't get the kinds of parts that she should get these days.
Yeah. And I'm always happy to see her. I'm like, kind of look exactly the same to me as you did in your early movies.
They are both ageless. It's very strange.
Yeah. 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 Maybe they should do Dracula again because they're both vampires. And then, did you like Destination Wedding?
I did. I liked it a lot.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Good. My next one was, I did a rewatch because it had been a while, of Gross Point Blank.
That's another good one. No, I already did it. Please. Okay. That's another really good one.
It's so fun. Joan Cusack is my favorite in it.
She's amazing.
She's amazing in, I think, everything she's in, but just, I like tweeted out that my favorite line is her thing about, it's like carrots and celery are just a base of a soup. It's like my favorite line in the movie because it's just the way she switches from like berating related to like the assassination and then switches back to talking about soup and then is getting pissed about soup. I was like, this is fantastic.
She has that amazing thing where it's like just a little bit of a lisp and it makes everything she says funnier.
Yes. And then Minnie Driver is adorable. I mean, she's great. John Cusack is, I know it's not the best he is, but he's
pretty good.
He's so good in it. And it's, I feel like it's not long before I'm less into his movies. Like, I'm not as into his movies now.
No, I'm not either. And for
like he kind of phones it in, and he wasn't phoning it in at this point.
No, this is like, again, partly because he had a hand in writing it, but this is like peak John Cusack because he's writing exactly the kind of dialogue that he delivers really well. He's playing exactly the kind of part he was born to play. He's got a hand in the music that plays on the soundtrack. And I mean, it just feels very much born of who he was sort of as a voice. And I don't know if there's ever been something more.
He needs to do that again.
He might be too far gone at this point.
Just doesn't care.
I don't know. I mean, he got into the whole like making these direct-to-video kind of action movies and thrillers that probably, you know, sell easily overseas because his name is on them. And so you can go to a Redbox and find 10 new John Cusack movies and he's always wearing a hat or a bandana. I suspect there's something going on with his hairline, but I don't know for sure. It's this weird moment trapped in time of when John Cusack was the coolest and when Minnie Driver was sort of the it girl in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And she was really given a raw deal. I think because she has a couple of movies and a couple of performances where she just is like this wonderful sparkling thing. And then, it's just gone. And you know, she continues to work and she continues to show up and stuff. And she's had a few TV series. So it's not like she's disappeared, but she never became the star that she seemed poised to be on the basis of something like Gross Point Blank, where, as you said, she's radiant.
Yeah. And I like, oh my God, the bad guy in it, I just blanked on his name.
Dan Aykroyd?
Yes. Like, the fact that Dan Aykroyd is the bad guy.
Right.
Like, just seems so unexpected.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's a little, like, not super, he's not intimidating, but like, still, he'll still kill a guy.
Right.
And I'm not used to seeing that either. I miss, like, all of the people that were in that movie.
Yeah, everybody is like somebody, even, you know, in 97. Right, in 97, Jeremy Piven shows up and you're like, haha, he's funny. because he's not yet the world's biggest douche, right?
And yes, exactly.
He does some really funny stuff in that movie.
Well, I love that he, first off, like, why even bother helping him, like, get rid of the body? But I love when they just go back to the bar and are, like, having a drink, and he's just like, all right, like, I'm out. Like,
right.
I'm out of here. But I would be like, why was that? Your immediate reaction was to help your old friend dispose of a body. Like,
what else are you going to do?
I don't know. I mean, Minnie Driver ran, and that was probably the right response.
Maybe.
I was happy to rewatch that. And at one point, Dave walked through, and I was like, have you seen this movie? And he said, no. And then I kind of got mad, but I was already like 3/4 of the way through.
I can't go back now.
I was like, well, I'll have you watch this another time.
Yeah. It's a good one. It's
It is.
That and High Fidelity, I feel like, are the two sort of high water marks of Cusack, at least in that period. Like, younger Cusack, it's The Sure Thing and Say Anything, and Better Off Dead. It's that trilogy. And then adult, that's teenage Cusack. And then adult Cusack is Gross Point Blank and High Fidelity. And that's kind of it. Those five. I mean, he has other good movies, but...
And we're almost 20 years ago at that point.
Oh, yeah, for sure. They were... Yeah, High Fidelity is 19, and Gross Point Blank is 22.
Yeah. Do we count 1408 as a good one?
It's not bad. Like I said, he's got other good movies, but I think if I was doing a top five Cusack, that's my five right there. Because he's in Eight Men Out. He's in, I mean, One Crazy Summer is kind of a fun movie. I'm embarrassed at how easily I can watch America's Sweethearts, even though that is not a good movie.
But I was like, I don't know if that one's a good
one. It's not. But if it's on cable, you better believe I'm staying on it for at least 10 minutes. I actually think Catherine Zeta-Jones is really funny in that movie.
She is. She is. I think I like her more than Julia Roberts in that one.
She's in the movie that everybody should be making, which is sort of an actual satire about Hollywood and Hollywood types. And then everyone else is in kind of just this soggy romantic comedy.
Yeah. I feel like I want John Cusack to have like a Nick Cage kind of thing where he'll just come up with some crazy movie that everybody loves, like a maybe like a Mandy situation.
That would be awesome.
Because Nick Cage does kind of the same thing where he makes like a lot of these.
Oh, yeah.
You know, straight to DVD kind of things, and it's like, what are you doing? And then he comes out with something brilliant and you're like, yes, perfect.
Right. And Nick Cage's excuse is at least like, oh, he has to pay for an island that he bought. I don't know what Cusack's excuse is, you know.
So if people haven't seen Gross Point Blank, watch that. It's great. My next one was The Cold Blue.
Okay, I don't think I know this one.
It's a documentary that's on, I think it just is on HBO. I don't know if it went into theaters or anything. And it was this director. They took footage from William Wyler's Memphis Belles, where back in 1943, William Wyler had gone and gone with the Memphis Belles, which was like the 8th Air Force in World War II. And he like flew with them and had made a movie about them kind of for like boosting morale and stuff. And they found the footage and they cut it down because I think it was like something like 16 hours. It was a ton of footage. They cut it down into a documentary film and they colorized it. So it all looks, it's crazy to watch because it's all, you're seeing the crowds and everybody's dressed like the 1940s, but it's all in color now. And, it kind of just goes with this 8th Air Force and, well, they're in World War II and they talk to all of the people who were on the Memphis Belles have since passed, but they talk to surviving members and it was like, they'd be like, I was 19 years old and, you know, like how, what they had to do while serving. It's very good and it's interesting. How they did it is very interesting. And then it's just kind of sad because again of how young all of them were. Like they talk about, like there's a part where they talk about like if they were getting breakfast and they got real eggs instead of powdered eggs, they knew it was like they were going on a dangerous mission because they were trying to be like, here's the last meal for you.
Oh boy.
And then even when William Wyler was filming, I think like one of the crew members was in one of the planes that got shot down and was killed. So it's definitely interesting. I don't know if it's for everybody, but
okay.
I liked it. And again, the footage was, I think, what made it, just because you don't, it kind of, I think it kind of reminded me of the, was it Peter Jackson did the one for
We Shall Not Grow Old, I think it was called.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if it was made before that or if it's kind of, but it's similar in like the style and, but it's like an hour and 20 minutes and it's on HBO.
All right.
So it's one I would like, again, it's check it out. And then my last one was Murder on the Orient Express, 1974 version.
Oh, I haven't seen this one. I thought you were going to say the Kenneth Branagh one, which I have seen.
I have seen the Kenneth Branagh one. I saw it in theaters.
Okay.
I mean, if you wanted me to talk about that one.
No, it's all right.
So this one is Sidney Lumet.
Yeah.
And it's Albert Finney plays Perot. And it's like this who's who cast of like, was it Ingmar Bergman and Sean Connery shows up, Vanessa Redgrave, and who else? There was like, there's just like all these people kept showing up. They were doing the credits in the beginning, and I'm just like, wow, that person's in this, that person's in this. They are the worst credits I've ever seen, though. They hurt my eyes. They were like hideously ugly. I was having a real font issue with them.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh, from a font perspective, I'm not enjoying this. It's better than the Branagh one.
Oh, okay.
It's better than that one. Yeah. I don't know if you liked that one.
I thought it was okay.
It's less flashy. Okay. Like, it's much more just this, like, old Belgian guy sitting down with people and talking to them. There's no, I don't know, I feel like there was more kind of action in the new one.
Yeah, well, they kept having to cut to like the shots of the CG train.
Yeah, no, like there's not that. It's very much the kind of one, not one room, but it's like most of the time they are kind of just in their little, and then the bunks they're in look so small. And I feel like the new one, they all seemed kind of like huge. But it's just a lot of like people being brought into a room and him talking to him and you realizing he's tricking them as they're talking with each other. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's very good. I would say watch that one, even if you've seen the new one. So
is that
you
one?
Haven't seen that one.
No, that's okay. Is that one still on? It was on Amazon Prime.
Yeah. That's where I just watched it.
Okay.
I was like, I don't know what I watched. And it was just like, you want to watch this next? And I was like, sure.
Yeah, I do.
I was like, I'll put that on. Why not? And then I will say, because the new one starts out and he's like showing himself. It's like showing him solving a case in another country, right? It's like, here's how smart he is. He figured out this case. This one shows the entire beginning of it is just like newsreel footage about the Daisy Armstrong, the kidnapping. And so there's like, you know, that's like a big thing from minute one, because the first 5 minutes are just, this kid was kidnapped. This kid was killed. Like all this stuff has happened. And then it goes into like, we're getting on the train. You're like, okay, well, you've clearly showed me that because you want me to know. And I didn't remember the new one having I thought that one kind of sprinkled it in more. Maybe it didn't, but I didn't think it made it like super obvious from the very beginning. And maybe I might be misremembering it though.
I barely remember. Perfect. I saw the new one and Justice League on the same day, and it was maybe the most forgettable day I've ever had at the theater. It was like, did I even see movies today? Because both of these are in and out of my brain.
I will say, I remember I saw it with my friend at the theater, and I think like we were walking to our cars, and I was like, I can feel that slipping out of my brain.
Yeah, yeah.
As we're walking away, I'm like, what just happened?
Which is unfortunate, right? Because it's the kind of movie that I wish they made more, which is like a little bit serious, definitely more geared towards adults, not completely reliant on spectacle. Certainly had an impressive cast. And I didn't necessarily have any problems with it. I just don't remember it very well.
Yeah, it just kind of goes away.
All that exists in my memory is Kenneth Branagh's mustache.
It's awful. Although, you know what? I don't know. His looks are less upsetting than Albert Finney's. Because, so, Albert Finney also, and he also, at like a certain point, like he, you see him go to bed and he's like putting hairnets on and then he puts like the little mask thing over his ear or his mustache as well. But they have him in like almost this like powder white face makeup. And then his eyebrows are combed up to be kind of bushy and like stick everywhere. And I was like, I have to stop. Like, I couldn't look at him like straight on because it upset me. And like, they do like close ups on his face. And I'd be like, I don't like this. Stop. Go away. And then, yeah, then what was it like? And then Sean Connery walks in and I'm like, you're really young. This is weird.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Who is Sean? Young, because I don't think Sean Connery was ever young, but.
What part is Sean Connery playing?
He's the colonel.
Okay.
He's, which I think might be, it's the one.
Was that Willem Dafoe? Like, no.
No, that's the like detective guy. It's the one who like had served with the little girl's father. And I think it's the one who has the relationship with Daisy Ridley.
Oh, okay. I
cannot remember the actor's name.
No, I can't either.
But it's that character, and his character I think is with it's like Debenham, and that might be Vanessa Redgrave. hold on, it's gonna bother me.
This is a fun podcast where we just try to piece together Murder on the Orient Express.
The old version,
right.
You know what? The best part of it is that I think my least favorite. In the new one was, I didn't think Johnny Depp fit at all. And
you glad to see him die.
It's just like the whole time I was like, well, it's Johnny Depp. Like,
right.
It's not a character.
Right.
And the old one has does a better job with that.
Okay.
It was Vanessa Redgrave.
All right. Good job.
But that's all I have for movies was those ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have three that I'll talk about quickly. The first is an anthology that just was released to Amazon Prime called She-Venge, and it's all horror shorts directed by women and centered on women. Former guest of the podcast, Izzy Lee, directs one. Stacey Wilson directs one. Karen Lam directs one. Misty Dawn directs one. I'm trying to remember who else had segments. Stacey Wilson does two, actually. Like all anthologies, it's incredibly uneven, and some segments are kind of good, and some segments you wonder how they ended up in the movie. If I have an issue with it, it's that it wasn't directed as an anthology. It was sort of an anthology that was pasted together from existing short films. It was like, oh, we have these eight short films that are all directed by female directors. Let's put them all together. So it's almost more of a compilation than it is an anthology. And there's an attempt to tie things together thematically. And then there's an actress.
Is there a wraparound?
There's like a hostess who pops up maybe four times, but it essentially amounts to a woman standing in a kitchen talking. There's no actual attempt at like a story wraparound. Mm-hmm. So there's sort of a host, but the movie could almost do without the host segments. You know, if you're a horror fan or you want to support female directed horror, by all means, give it a watch. I think some of the segments are really strong. I think some are less so, which is true of any anthology. So I don't think this one is any worse than a lot of the other anthologies that I've seen. And it's certainly better than some that I've wasted my time with on Amazon Prime. So there's that.
Can you say which one was your favorite?
Which one was my favorite? There were two that I liked a lot. One near to the end. And right now I can't even remember what the story was. And I liked Izzy Lee's because it has it's called For a Good Time Call. And I had actually seen it prior to seeing it as part of this anthology. But there is a moment and an image in For a Good Time Call that is very upsetting and disturbing. I won't say what it is, but it's very messed up. I you know, there were none that I felt like totally that I wasted my time on. Karen Lahm's is good too, which involves, it's called like Doll Parts or something like that. But it's worth checking out if you're a horror fan. Erica and I have been watching some movies inspired by Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So we last week we watched Valley of the Dolls for the first time. This week we watched a movie called Murderer's Row, which is one of the Dean Martin, Matt Helm movies. That's not The Wrecking Crew. The Wrecking Crew is the movie that Sharon Tate goes to see in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. This is not the one that she's in. This is, I think, the one before that. But we also watched Sharon Tate's first film appearance in a movie from 1967 called Don't Make Waves, with Tony Curtis and Claudia Cardinale. Sharon Tate plays a surfer named Malibu, because what else would her name be?
Of course.
And she's like fifth build. She's not in the movie a ton, and she's mostly around to be beautiful. It's more about Tony Curtis moving out to California, sort of stumbling into a job as a pool salesman, befriending Claudia Cardinale, who's having an affair with a married man who's also a pool salesman. And then Tony Curtis becomes obsessed with Malibu and really wants to sleep with her. It's one of these movies that's really just, there are so many movies. I can't believe there's an entire subgenre of movies that are just about like men desperate to have sex with this one woman, right? 10 is another one with Dudley Moore. American Beauty is one. Like, we could probably come up with an entire list. Don't Make Waves is sort of one of those movies. And it's very strange because it's ostensibly a comedy, but I don't think there were any jokes. it was like totally entertaining as we were watching it, you know, as sort of this relic of the late 1960s. I enjoyed myself, but I can't make a case that it's a good movie in any way.
I feel like when you watched, I remember you saying when you watched 10, didn't you have the same issue where you were like, I don't think there was any jokes in what should be a comedy?
10 was just bad. Like, I just did not like 10 at all. This was breezier and a little less gross. Perhaps, again, as a relic of its time, there's something slightly more innocent about it, whereas 10 was a little kind of more lascivious and just, I don't know, just gross. But yeah, 10 was completely unfunny as well.
Yeah. They need to not make those movies, maybe. I don't know if they really make them anymore. Like the one guy who's like desperate to sleep with a woman who is not really them, like barely has a character, it seems like.
Yeah.
A lot of the time.
Hopefully that is a subgenre that has gone away.
At
some point in the development process, somebody would be like, hey, maybe let's not make this movie.
Like, they've done it. It didn't work.
Right. American Pie was sort of that movie, but that was more in like the Porky's tradition, which is like, here's a group of men desperate to lose their virginity. It doesn't matter to who, right? It's like, we'll have sex.
They're not
with
obsessed with one person.
Exactly. It's positively benign. We'll have sex with anyone.
Anything.
Yeah, right. That's right. Yeah. Gosh, I forgot the title of the movie. Oh my gosh. It's so weird. By the way, have you ever seen the unrated versus the theatrical cut of that movie?
Of American Pie?
Yeah.
I don't know if I would know the difference.
So I wouldn't either, I don't think, except that that image, that scene, is sort of indelibly, you know, embedded in my brain because I remember going to see it and it's him having sex with a pie. He's standing up and you see from the back, he's standing up having sex with a pie. The big change to the unrated version is he's laying down on top of the counter having sex with the pie.
Oh, then that's the version I've seen.
Okay.
Yeah. than I have seen the one where he's on a counter.
It's so...
Because I was not old enough to see that in theaters.
Okay. It's just so bizarre that that's the big change, that, like, well, we can't get away with him laying down having sex with a pie. Standing up is okay. But if he's laying down with it, then it's a, then it's an NC-17.
Like, along with everything else, like, the other stuff's all fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, the pie sex is fine. It's just...
He just needs to be standing up. Yeah, please. Yeah, super weird. The only other movie that I'll talk about is Erica and I went to see Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Did you bring the kids or just you guys?
Did not bring the kids. Yeah, it was just us. And boy, I wish I liked this movie more.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I grew up reading those books. And
same.
I can't get past... It's well made. I like the period setting, and for the first 15 minutes or so, I'm really on board because it's set on Halloween, and they get the color of the sky right. You know, everything is like, oh, this is going to be a movie that I watch every October. I'm still coming to grips with the structure of the thing. I cannot for the life of me figure out why they didn't just make it a traditional anthology. Because the structure that they came up with, for me, just does not work. It basically amounts to some kids running around reading from a book, and then they're occasionally visited by a character from one of the stories in Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. But they don't really tell the story. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, it's just here's that monster.
Exactly. So, like, okay. They do the big toe, and they talk a little bit about the big toe, and there's a soup with a toe in it, you know. And then the monster from the illustration shows up, and that's it. They don't really do the setup and the payoff of the big toe. And they do that, you know, then they repeat that structure 4 or 5 times, and then that's your movie.
Mm-mm.
And it was very disappointing for me. Like, I just don't think that was the way to handle the narrative.
So if you were kind of wanting the anthology, would it be like... The kids find the book, they read the story, and as they're reading the story, it goes in and shows the story? Like it.
Yeah, if you want to do that as a wraparound, that, you know, I don't even think you need a wraparound necessarily, but if you want to, yeah, like, let's each take a turn telling a scary story, and then you tell each of the stories. Right, exactly. Just tell each of the stories. Because for me, this was a weird way to handle it. And I mean, Goosebumps did something very similar.
I was going to say, Goosebumps had, like, the monsters coming that you know from the books, but they weren't really the way that they are in the books.
Right.
Like, it wasn't the same setup. But it worked. I don't know. I thought like the first ones worked. How does it compare on, like, scares level to a Goosebumps or a House with a Clock on its Walls?
It's more intense than either of those.
Okay. 6-year-old niece, hold off on.
Yeah, I don't think she's ready. The scares aren't, you know, the scares in those movies, I think, are a little bit more fun.
Kid-friendly.
Yeah. And the scares in this aren't fun.
I mean, the trailer, like, the images on these ones, because they look like, they do look like the illustrations.
They do.
Are disgusting. Like,
yeah. Yeah, so it's definitely more intense.
They used to have the Scary Stories books in my elementary school classrooms. So they were a staple growing up.
I'm sure, yeah. And, you know, for years, I feel like they've been talking about making this into a movie. I feel like Guillermo del Toro has been attached for a long time. And so I was excited that it was finally happening and getting made. And, oh my gosh, it's actually coming out and I can go see it. And then I just wasn't thrilled with the finished product. The movie is trying to say a lot of things about the late 60s and Nixon and Vietnam. That's all very much in the background. Yeah.
I don't know. That seems like a bad idea.
I mean, I think it's...
Or it seems like an idea that can get, like, very muddled and not work.
Yeah, it's sort of trying to do two things at once. It's like, well, let's tell these stories or at least show these drawings that people remember from these famous books. But, you know, we want our movie to be a little deeper. We want it to be about something more. So every once in a while, we'll cut to a TV covering the election of Richard Nixon, or someone will mention Vietnam. And it's almost on two separate tracks. trying to suggest that, you know, that the two things are connected, but I don't, for my money, they never quite connected.
Okay. So wait till it, should I watch it?
Sure.
Should I wait till it comes out on demand?
I probably would. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. With It Chapter 2 coming out in 2 weeks, I would say,
I'm so excited for that.
me too. I would say save your money and go see that. And hold off on Scary Stories. But I'm kind of in the minority because I know a lot of like horror journalists and people online were big, big fans of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. I know Rob really liked it. So
yeah, that was, but he mentioned it like last week.
Yeah.
Or whenever it was. Well, that's a bummer that it didn't work for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just broken.
It happens.
Yeah. Right. but speaking of Scary Stories, let's talk about Return to Oz.
Oh, God. Why did we do this to ourselves?
I'm not sure. I
suggested other movies.
You did, and that was the one that jumped out at me. and part of it was just I was interested in rewatching it because I had seen it, but it had been a number of years, and it's not a movie. I didn't really grow up with it, and so it's not a movie I'm super familiar with.
Sorry. Okay. So like you didn't watch it on repeat as a kid?
I did not.
Okay. I did.
You did. Okay.
I watched it a lot. And when I told my mom I was watching it for a podcast, she just paused and was like, I hate that movie, which I think means I made her watch it a lot.
So what was the appeal for you as a kid?
I'm not entirely sure. I had a weird thing where I watched on repeat that Unico movie that I've talked about before, Return to Oz, The Peanut Butter Solution, if you remember that movie.
I have heard of it, but never seen it.
It was that, Flight of the Navigator, and weirdly, like, the Care Bear movie. Okay. Those were on, like, a regular repeat for me. So, and then I would watch the original Wizard of Oz, and then I'd be like, time to watch Return to Oz, even though they do not connect in any sort of way.
They really like, don't. it's a weird case of, like, as I was watching it yesterday, I was thinking about, this is one of those sequels that never should have been, which isn't to say that the movie's bad or that it shouldn't exist, but there are certain movies that have sequels. I'm thinking of, like, 2010, the sequel to 2001,
Scarlet, the sequel to Gone with the Wind.
Scarlet, the sequel to Gone with the Wind. The Two Jakes, the sequel to Chinatown. To a perhaps lesser extent, Blade Runner 2049. Some of these are good movies. 2010 is a good movie. Blade Runner 2049, I think, is a good movie. But I also think that they just shouldn't exist. We have this perfect original thing. I kind of wish that it just was able to stand on its own and never had any sequels. Now, I mean, Wizard of Oz has had animated remakes and Muppets Wizard of Oz. And I mean, it's not as though, right. It's not as though Return to Oz is the only bastardization of the original Wizard of Oz, but it is
the first.
It might've been the first, and it's the only one to be a direct sequel where they're referencing events from the first movie, where they're referencing the Ruby Slippers, which they had to pay money to get. Disney had to pay a bunch of money to license the Ruby Slippers because those were the only things. Those did not come from the original L. Frank Baum novels. That those were created by MGM, so they had to pay a bunch of money to get those.
The fact that it's a Disney movie blows my mind.
Disney was in a weird free fall in the mid-80s, I feel like, because I had the Black Cauldron in my head as I was watching this, which is another, like, we think this is what people want, and then no one does. But later on, it becomes kind of this cult movie, which I would say also describes Return to Oz.
Mm-hmm. It's, and this might just be, I don't think it's all, like, 80s kids movies, but certain 80s kids movies are like real dirty looking, and this is one of them. Like, it feels so dark and dirty, especially compared to the original Wizard of Oz, which is like bright and happy. And this is so just like, I felt grimy sometimes watching it. I will say one thing that works for me is, and I'm maybe going to say it, Firouza Balk. Is that how you say her name?
I believe so, yes.
She works for me as Dorothy. It's weird that she's much younger than Judy Garland.
Yeah.
So you went from having a, like, what, 16-year-old playing Dorothy to what's maybe a 10-year-old? Like, she looks so young. But I thought the, like, kind of her eyes, like, she has these giant eyes that just look, like, innocent the whole time. And I was like, that actually worked for me. Like, her kind of curiosity and, like, kidness worked. Not everything else did.
Well, and she's, if I'm not mistaken, she's the age that Dorothy was originally written.
Yeah, she's, it's like, that's correct. She should be a child.
Right.
We don't care about spoilers or anything like that, right?
No,
like,
I think it's okay to spoil Return to Oz.
From 1985. This movie starts out with them sending her to get a lot of electroshock therapy.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Everything about it is the darkest, dreariest. The fucking origin story of the Tin Man is the most insane thing I've ever heard. Again, you watch the original Wizard of Oz and you're like, oh, there was this man made of tin and he was magically brought to life and he wishes he had a heart. And in this movie, they're like, no. He systematically chopped off all of his limbs and replaced them with tin parts. And you're picturing a human man sawing off his own arm and reattaching a new tin arm and then doing it again for the other arm. It's like this movie will not be happy until it is... until it has destroyed every one of your fond memories from the original film.
Which that might be the book. I don't remember.
I've never read those. If I read any of the books, it was when I was so young that I don't remember at all.
I went through like a period where I was reading a bunch of them. Like Ozma is a big, big part of the books. I mean, I already had from the Kinder Trauma episode that I hate the Wheelers. They're just creepy. And
yeah.
Like, they get less creepy once you, like, see that they're human. It's just that first scene when they've got, like, the mask things down. And then they get really whiny, and I'm like, shut up. But
the very first one is, like, scary. And, like, oh, my
yeah,
God,
like, it pops
what
its
is
head
that?
Around, you're like, ugh.
Yes, that is,
but
like...
then when they're like, let me go, I'm just
right.
like,
Yeah, I agree. After that, they don't they cease to be terrifying, I think.
Yeah.
But I'm also an adult man, not a child watching this movie, so.
I will say that the Deadly Desert is still creepy. Like, way to put into your kids' movie that if you touch the sand, you just turn into sand and die immediately.
And again, like, it's just a weird throwaway detail that they don't need to include. It's just
No.
It's like the Tin Man. It's like it's not – it doesn't really factor into the plot. We don't actually see it happen to anyone, but it's just this thing that we want to mention. Like, oh, yeah, by the way, if we step on the sand, we'll turn to sand and die. On to the next thing.
Yep. And then they show it. They show what happens.
Oh, they do show that happen. That right.
Yeah, they
right.
show the Wheelers fall on it, and they like right. show in detail as they get changed into sand and vanish. And I'm like, oh, okay. They try to give Dorothy sidekicks like they do in Wizard of Oz, and none of them work. Like, Jack Pumpkinhead is one of the most annoying characters, I think, I've seen in just a long time. Like, I just wanted him to go away. I didn't hate TikTok.
Sure. I mean, again, we just have variations on sort of the original.
Oh, yeah. It's exactly.
So TikTok is the Tin Woodsman and Jack Pumpkinhead is the Scarecrow. We don't really get a substitute Cowardly Lion. The closest thing, I guess, is the Gump, right? The flying couch with a moose head.
Like,
what?
He does not seem to, he's like, please, like, yeah, get rid of the wings and the things. And like, I would prefer to just be a head,
yeah.
But also like, I think he just wants to be dead again.
He does. Why did you curse me with life?
Like, why would you do this?
Why did you?
Also, a talking chicken. We get Belina, the talking chicken.
Oh, I forgot about the fucking chicken.
How could you forget? She's the MacGuffin. She saves the day. Why are gnomes allergic to eggs? Who knows?
This is my frustration with the movie, because there's a lot about the movie that. There's things about it that I like, you know, I don't love the aesthetic. I hold the original Wizard of Oz in obviously very high regard. It's one of my favorite movies. And that is not saying anything interesting or original. Like, really? Wizard of Oz is good? Yeah. Also, I like birthday cake, right? So, but I like, you know, I'm a sucker for these, the special effects of this time period, the puppetry, the animatronics, the claymation that's used. I like all that stuff. And this movie is, you know, bursting with all kinds of weird things to look at and imagination, like a labyrinth, like a Dark Crystal. I like all that stuff. I think the aesthetic is dreary and, mm-hmm. and unpleasant. So it's not like happy, fun imagination. It's like depressing imagination where you want to just get electroshock therapy, to get the movie out of your head. The tagline of the movie reads, "It's an all new live action fantasy filled with Disney adventure and magic." Like, no, it is not. It is filled with dark, dreary adventure and nightmare magic. But my issue with the movie is that as a narrative, it's literally just characters standing around explaining things to each other, delivering exposition. Well, this is this, and here's this, and so little of the plot actually advances through action, and the few times it does, it's completely arbitrary action. Like, oh, everyone from Oz got turned into green things, and didn't you know that, you know, if I lay an egg in the mouth of the Gnome King, he's going to be poisoned and die? And we didn't set that up at any point in the movie. It's just
something they just kept saying chickens. Oh, right, no, right. Chickens.
It's just something we drop after it happens. I just was amazed as I was watching it how much of the movie is characters sort of delivering exposition to one another.
Well, Dorothy does that a lot. Whereas I'm like, when did you learn this stuff, Dorothy? Because I feel like we saw all of your time in Oz.
We did.
Previously. So yeah. How did you know that the Deadly Desert was right when you were flying over? When did right you fly over? Like, how did you know that? And then, like, the lunch pail trees. I was like, what? How did you know that was a thing? Like, how did you know any of this?
Right.
And then the fact that they're like at the very end, they're like, we'll make you queen. And I'm like, no, she's a child. I mean, they made another child queen, but
they made the Scarecrow king.
They did. And then immediately we're like, never mind the Scarecrow. You messed this up.
You are not fit for office.
She's only been gone, like they said, 6 months.
Yes.
It was like 6 months. And he let that kingdom fall into ruin.
He literally was brainless 6 months ago. He literally was without a brain in his head, and they made him king.
And they don't say like when the Gnome King took over, but like that place was trashed.
Yeah.
So it and like overgrown, and I was like, it seems like it's been a little while.
It's been a while.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe plants grow really fast in Oz.
Oh, yeah, they do, because didn't you know it's the blah, blah, blah and the blah, 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 right? This is the scene that's missing.
Maybe, or they're going to be like, time moves differently, and like, it's a Narnia-style thing where it was 6 months for her, but 20 years for Oz.
Right.
It's like, okay.
It's a frustrating aspect of fantasy when you can make up any rule you want at any time you want. And the poison eggs is a good example of that, where it's like, you just need something to happen. So you just make up a rule that like, oh yeah, by the way, they're allergic to eggs. That's a thing. They're, you know, it's poison to them. The lunch pail trees is another example. Like it's a fine visual, I guess. Although I don't know how anyone in Oz knows what a lunch pail is. That seems like a very...
How long are those ham sandwiches inside of them Earth there? How does
which
any
means,
of that
right,
work?
Which means there are pigs in Oz which have been murdered and turned into and sandwiches.
Like, but that's the... Do they talk?
Do the sandwiches talk?
Yeah. Not the sandwiches. The pigs.
Do the pigs talk before they're murdered? All... Possibly. Yeah, right.
Like, a chicken gets to Oz and immediately starts talking. So, like, that means there must have been a mass chicken slaughter when the Gnome King took over.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there was...
A chicken genocide.
This is another part where Dave walked through as the Wheelers were yelling chicken, and he just like stopped, looked, and just started like sarcastically laughing and then just kept walking. And I was like, no, I get not sitting down and watching this one with me. Like, I understand this. Okay. The mom bee still kind of works for me because I, for some reason in my head, when I was a kid, she was like an even bigger part. She's not a tiny part, a small part, but like I thought that I felt like as a kid, the heads thing was more of a thing, okay. But it might've just been remembering that the visual of her running right. through all the heads there. I couldn't figure out how she, they said that, when they see all the people turn to stone. And then I have to think some of the people who turn to stone are like knocked over and broken. I was like, they're straight up dead.
Yeah.
Like they're not getting turned back. But then there was the dancing woman with no heads. And they said, Mombi took their heads. And then you see them at the end and they appear to be back to normal.
Right.
And I was like, okay, again, you don't, I know you shouldn't have to explain everything to me. But like, did she take the heads and then they got turned to stone? Did you take stone heads off of statues and turn them back human? How are they still alive? None of this makes sense to me.
Well, and how are they cool with just being heads? Why aren't they all, like, screaming in terror and agony?
Like, do they lose their personalities? Are they now... Because they said they can't really remember what, like, the other ones...
Right.
...did.
Right.
But, like, are they sort of controlled by Mombi because they all seem to be kind of... Like, she puts on the new head, and it's kind of a jerk. But then you see that girl at the end, and she's like, look, we've got her in a cage. We're going to arrest her. So, like, clearly she wasn't evil. And I was like, I don't understand any of this.
I like the idea of, like, switching the heads, you know? I don't totally understand the logistics of it, but it's a neat visual in the room with all the heads and where she's trying to sneak past the Mombi head. And, like, all that stuff is kind of cool. You know, obviously Margaret Hamilton is a hard act to follow in terms of being your villain. And they try to come up with, you know, a version of the Wicked Witch that's different enough. And I think at that they're mostly successful.
She never really feels threatening to me, though, just because, like, Dorothy outwits her so easily.
Sure.
Like, so easily. I will say... I don't know if it worked for me, but the scene when the Gnome King like tells her to bow and then tells her to bow lower and then she's like on the floor and he's like lower and she kind of just like glares at him and he just starts laughing. I was like, I like this, but it doesn't seem like it should be in a kid's movie. Like this isn't, it does not seem like a kid's movie thing, but like this is kind of evil and I like it. I enjoyed that at the end, as they got turned into more and more ornaments, which I guess was how he was becoming human. He became more like human-ish.
Right. Right.
But at a certain point I was looking and I was like, he just looks like, to me, he looks like, he should have been like the Ghost of Christmas Present.
Like I thought he was going to be like the Burger mud. King.
You got what?
I thought he was going to be the Burger King.
I mean, he had that look to him.
That's what I kept waiting for.
He kind of worked for me. The fact when he, like, when she's crying and he's trying to be, like, he's so just, like, fakely nice.
Right.
But it makes him a little more evil. And then there was one part where he said something and he's just like, you know, oh, sorry. And it was like the way he says sorry. And I was like, you're such an asshole. And I kind of liked that. But then like, you're defeated by a chicken. And like, also if you're going to kill them anyway, like why bother the, like, we'll let you have guesses.
Right.
Like don't just, I mean, maybe I'd be a terrible villain or maybe I'd be a good villain. Cause I'd just be like, just kill them. Like just do it now.
Cause you just get down to business.
Exactly.
This Gnome King is unable to get down to business. He's lived in the wall of a cave for a long time and yet is willing to stall for time by letting her guess and letting them all guess, really.
And then his, like, does he turn them into the emerald color things? Is it just, it has to be because they're from the Emerald City? And I was are they all from the Emerald City? Where's the Gump from? Jack Pumpkinhead. Where the hell is he from? Like, they don't know any of this.
Do we need to talk about Jack Pumpkinhead calling Dorothy mom?
I mean, we can.
It's just...
Granted, his real mother is also a child, so...
Oh, that's right.
It's like, oh, it's my real ma. And it's like... And she repeat. I feel like a few times she's like, I'm not your mom. In the beginning, when she's like, no, I'm not your mother. And then she has, like, the immediate connection with TikTok. Like, how clearly Scarecrow is Dorothy's favorite in Wizard of Oz. And in this one, it's like, TikTok, and she's crying, and she's so upset and everything. And I was like, why?
Right.
What he's been the use. He will. I will say he's the most useful when he starts just spinning in a circle with a lunch pail. But
until again, his function
runs down
conveniently when it's like, oh, now's the worst possible time, and oh, TikTok can't do anything because he's run down. It's one of these things where they just introduce a rule that they just made up. Whatever, it's fine.
Well, I like that she's like, oh, they should have given you a thing to like turn it yourself. And I was like, don't point that out to us.
Right.
Like, don't tell us that. I will say I chuckled at the line where she goes in and he's like muttering just nonsense. And Jack Pumpkinhead's like, I don't know, like I thought he was still working because he was still talking.
Right.
And she's like, oh no, people's brains stop working and they still talk. And I was like, yeah, well, that's a cute little line. Why at the end is the nurse lady going to jail?
Oh, I don't know.
Because
she's the villain in real life too.
But like, yeah, but I couldn't figure out why, because they brought her to have electroshock therapy.
Right.
And I mean, obviously that's a horrible thing. But in the context of that time and where, like, what was happening, I don't think she'd done anything illegal. And then they were, like, toting her away, and she's glaring out at Dorothy. And I was like, is Dorothy her, like, mortal enemy? Like,
yes!
Like, and I was watching it, I was looking at it from her perspective, is, because I don't know, I'm assuming she can't see the other little girl, that it's, like, Dorothy just is the only one seeing Ozma. So to her, this child who she's like technically in like protection of for at least a night. And yes, they are going to like fry her brain and that's horrible. And like, it's not a good thing, but she's like, she doesn't seem to think she's doing a bad thing. She just sees this little girl run outside in a horrible storm and then like fall into a river and get swept away. So she's probably like, oh God, this patient of ours has just drowned.
Right.
And I was like, I don't think that's an evil thing. And the doctor, they just straight up are like, he died.
Yeah,
he
I
burnt
mean,
him down.
What?
Like,
what?
Like,
this movie has a weird need to punish. Like, I don't remember them murdering Miss Gulch in the original Wizard of Oz, where they're like, oh yeah, by the way, the real life equivalent of the Wicked Witch. Yeah, she was torn apart by wild animals. But this movie feels the need to punish the human counterparts of the fantasy villains by sending one to jail and burning one to death.
Like,
what is this and movie?
I'm surprised that Oz didn't have a version of the electric shock machine, because he specifically pointed out that it had a face. Unless it did, there was one and I just missed it. Because he was like, the machine has a face.
Right.
Look at it.
Right.
Here's the eyes. And like, that thing is clearly supposed to be a bad thing.
I'm pretty sure it was TikTok.
Was it TikTok? Her best bud. She's like, actually, the electroshock
Dorothy,
therapy.
Let me attach these electrodes to your skull. Uh-oh, my action wound down. Dorothy, wind me up so I can give you shocks.
I wouldn't put it past him.
Dorothy, this won't hurt a bit.
I also liked at the end when they're all celebrating and it's back to being, it's all back to normal, and I'm like, again, I guess magic, and
yeah.
Every building is fixed,
right,
everything,
magic.
Like, okay. Magic.
Oz magic.
That's how it works. That they were like, why don't you stay here? Like, even if you're not queen, like, stay here with us. And she's like, no, I have to go home. And I'm like, why? You don't even like it.
Right? You don't even home like is a it. Miserable place. Your home was destroyed by a tornado. Your aunt and uncle want to send you to electroshock therapy. Home is a terrible, terrible place. Not that Oz is like so great. There's stuff everywhere that wants to kill you, apparently. But
it's entirely surrounded by a desert that you can never get over.
Right.
What?
But all your friends are there, right? I mean,
yeah, she has no friends in Kansas besides Toto,
right?
And I feel like she could go back and be like, "I'm bringing Toto with me. He's coming with."
But why doesn't Toto talk in Oz?
Oh, like the first movie?
Yeah.
I don't know.
All of a sudden the chickens talk, but Toto doesn't.
Chickens are just real special.
Well, their eggs are poison.
To gnomes.
To gnomes. I can't get past that plot point. It really bothers me.
Just an egg going down.
Right? Like,
what? Nothing makes sense.
No, nothing makes sense. And this movie, by the way, we should mention, is literally the only movie to ever have been directed by Walter fucking Murch, like the legendary editor of Apocalypse Now and The Godfather 1, 2, and 3, The Conversation, American Graffiti. Like, this man has edited some of the best movies ever made. He directed one movie, and it's Return to Oz. He also co-wrote the script, so he's, like, partly responsible for it.
Why? Why did he do
I don't know. Again,
like, has he ever come out and talked about, like, why he did this?
I really don't know. I mean, I get that it was an opportunity. You're directing this fantasy movie for Disney. It's the sequel to The Wizard of Oz, but it is just this weird, like, curiosity. You know, if you asked, I think, 9 out of 10 people that don't follow movies that closely, they would not be able to tell you that The Wizard of Oz ever had a sequel, right? If you just were to take a poll of random people, like, hey, did they ever make another Wizard of Oz? Most people would say, no, what are you talking about? It's only people like us. Yeah, right, exactly. Maybe they would remember that because it showed on TV. But this movie is sort of lost to, again, people like us who are into weird movies, children of the 80s, you know, more cinephile types who pay attention to this kind of stuff, but I feel like most people. So I don't know why this was the one movie that he chose to direct. And I don't, oddly enough, I think it's a weirdly like flabby movie, because it's almost 2 hours long. And I think as, you know, as an editor, he includes way more stuff than he probably should have. I think this movie probably should have been 89 minutes, just the good parts and like get in, get out. But it runs almost 2 hours.
I don't know if I realized until you'd pointed out how much it's just people standing around saying things.
It's the whole movie.
Which is like a lot of movies, but like it's just Dorothy telling somebody like it's this thing.
But this is supposed to be this sort of fantasy adventure. And it's not. It's just characters explaining things to one another. You know, there's no songs, which think about how much character is introduced in the original film with the songs. Just If I Only Had a Brain, If I Only Had a Heart. Like, we get to know everything we need to know in the span of one song about all the major characters. And in this movie, we don't. So we just have characters explaining things to one another.
Mm-hmm. I also noticed during this watch how quickly she gets from where it would be like the Munchkins where the house dropped to the Emerald City, because I think she runs it in about 5 minutes.
Oh, but first we have to destroy the fucking yellow brick road.
Oh yeah, like, no, that's trashed.
Anything that we hold dear from the original Wizard of Oz, this movie shits on its memory.
It's like, listen, this ain't your mama's.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. This ain't your mama's Wizard of Oz.
I had just pulled up the page for it. Now I feel like a dummy because I didn't realize that Auntie M was Piper Laurie.
It sure is.
And I was like, I kept being like, she looks familiar. She looks familiar. And like, did not pick up on that. But nobody else. Well, Fairuza Bach.
Yeah.
than just a bunch of other people who were 80s actors. Oh, the co-writer of this was also the guy who was a co-writer of Walk the Line.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So random. Is it, again, is it just the 80s? Is it the Coke?
So yeah, was their goal, you know, I know part of the goal was to be more faithful to the spirit of the L. Frank Baum books, because the original movie, you know, for the most part, isn't. It takes some of the ideas and turns it into a very shiny, expensive Hollywood musical. And it's literally the most delightful movie ever made, right? So they took some license and it paid off. And so they were like, what if instead we just made it a gray, dreary mud bath of a movie where everyone's miserable and everything sucks? Yes, that would be more like the children's fantasy we grew up reading.
And like, there's stuff from this movie that are like things in the books, but from what I remember when I read them, like, they don't make you want to just like die. Like they're not depressing. They're still kids' fantasy books. Like, why?
No, this movie is literally what you see if you're put in an asylum and given electroshock therapy. Like, oh, this is exactly what you experience. These are the visions that you have. You imagine the Scarecrow, but he doesn't look like the Roy Bolger Scarecrow from the original Wizard of Oz.
Terrifying. Yeah, the Scarecrow is so creepy.
He's H.R. Puffin stuff. He's
the Tin Man's horrifying looking.
Yeah.
And then
the lion's okay. Lion. He's just
a giant stuffed animal that she's riding, and I had to laugh at that because you see him when he's stoned and it looks like a real lion,
right.
And then you see her riding him in and it's like
he's just a big lion puppet,
just a straight up stuffed animal. But the Tin Man is horrible, and yeah, the Scarecrow is, his face is, I mean, it's not. It doesn't look like Scarecrow either. Like, that's not a Scarecrow that you would make and put out to scare anything. It's just stupid.
And so, I don't have the illustrations in front of me. Maybe those are closer to the original illustrations in the books. I don't know. Somebody can probably tell us in the comments if they're more faithful to what was in the original books in terms of the designs of those characters. Some of it was probably for legal reasons, again, because they didn't want to have to pay MGM even more money. They already had to pay for the ruby slippers. So it's like, well, we don't want to have to pay to recreate the very famous makeups that they did. So let's come up with our own sort of skewed versions of those characters. But yeah, it's very strange. It's very, I'm all for, you know, one of the movies that we talked about doing, and is a movie that I'm sure we'll get around to doing eventually, is Time Bandits. Mm-hmm. And Time Bandits, to me, is a movie that is both high fantasy and weird, dark, surreal thing, and does it exactly right. It's the perfect mix of, like, some of this is nightmare fuel for kids, but some of this is really fun and really energetic. And, like, I want to be part of this. I want to go on this adventure. I want to go meet Robin Hood, right? And this movie only gets the dark parts right, I feel like. But I don't think it works inside of a children's film.
No. I mean, like, you're going to do this. If you're going to start out with the electroshock therapy and Oz is trashed and everything, like, I don't know, go full horror, go full, like,
right,
R-rated, like, it's dark.
The R-rated Return
maybe
to
PG-13,
Oz.
Maybe PG-13. But, like, yeah, don't make it a kid's movie then, because the imagery could work for something purposefully terrifying.
Yeah. It's missing something to contrast all of the darkness and the bleakness, right? I mean, it also needs some lightness and some whimsy and some joy, and it never really has any of those things.
No. I feel like the most you get is when she first gets there, she sees, like, when they sit down with the trees, and she's like, oh, I'm excited, like, lunch pail tree thing, and it's bright, and it's a little colorful, and I'll sit down. And then you get, like, at the very end, when they're in the palace, it's just literally glass everywhere, so it's like the first time things are kind of bright, but you're there for what, like, 2 minutes,
right?
And the rest of the time it's just muddy and sad and broken.
It would be like if the original Wizard of Oz spent the entire time in that forest where the trees are throwing apples at them and, like, flying monkeys are trying to kill them. If the entirety of the movie was that
your
scene...
Your bookends were, like, a little bit of happiness.
Right. But not even, because someone's trying to shock Dorothy.
And I was like, I like how they're like, everything's fixed now. And it's like, well, I mean, not really, because, like, the place burned down. Your aunt and uncle were, like, worried about you. But, I mean, they... still assume that she's crazy. Like, what are they gonna just send her somewhere else? They'll just be like, oh, we heard about this thing where they put a hole in your head, so we're gonna try that now.
Yeah, they're just gonna straight up lobotomize her in Wizard of Oz 3.
Like, she's gonna slip up. She's gonna try to pretend she's normal, because she's like, calls her aunt up to be like, look in the mirror, and Ozma's like, no, don't do that, you dumb dumb.
They're gonna catch her talking to a chicken.
Yeah, they're gonna be like, oh, she was not fixed. Like,
and
she's
that's
still
it.
Crazy. And then they had said, like, in the beginning, they were like, and she says this too, like, why are you here in this hospital? Or, like, why are you having this done? And it's the, I can't stop talking about Oz, but it's also, I can't sleep. And she even seemed to have, like, the dark circles under her eyes and everything. I was like, is that fixed now? How come she can't sleep? Like, she seemed pretty happy the first trip to Oz, and then was extremely happy to be home. So why does she have, like, trauma and the inability to like sleep or focus on reality?
Because Return to Oz has to introduce us to haunted Dorothy. She's a Dorothy who's seen some shit.
Maybe that worked better if she wasn't a 10-year-old child.
Right, exactly.
Like, this is not how I want to see Dorothy.
No.
Like, I don't want to see this child be, like, horribly treated by, which really should be the adults in her life. Like, it's not a good situation for her. She should have stayed in Oz.
I do love the thing that, like, 80s movies were able to do, which is, you know, they were able to be weird and scary. And this movie is definitely those things, you know, especially to a kid. It's weird and scary. I don't think it, and I feel like that's mostly why it still gets talked about when people talk about movies that are weird and scary or Kinder Trauma. I know you brought it up on that show. I feel like that's why Wizard of Oz, or Return to Oz, is still getting talked about at all. And I respect that. I just think there are other movies, like some of the movies we've already name-checked, like Dark Crystal or like Time Bandits, that are able to do those things and then also be good movies on top of it.
They can actually tell a coherent, good story.
Right.
Yeah. I wanted to rewatch it, because again, I watched it so much as a kid, and I'm not entirely sure I liked it as a kid. It was just, again, it was like a thing. I had to watch it.
Well, and you get drawn to certain images, and you know, if some stuff freaks you out, it's almost like this way of mastering your fear of it is just to keep watching it, because it's like, I know this thing upsets me, so I want to keep watching it and understand why, or watch it until I'm no longer upset by it or scared by it.
Yeah. I was hoping when I watched this one that I'd find some, like, it'd be a hidden gem. And
yeah.
I was like, oh, I missed it. Like, I didn't realize what it was saying. And now I'm an adult and I get it. And I'm like, oh, I mean, they're saying it because they, like, outright say everything.
Right.
But it's not telling anything. Electroshock therapy is bad. I feel like we knew that. Having an imagination is bad? I don't know if that's what it means.
Imagination is bad. That's the moral of the story.
Imagination will have people make your family turn on you. Like, things break easily and nothing lasts. Like,
don't value technology or you'll burn to death.
That too. I mean, that's just a lesson everybody needs to know.
Unless it's TikTok, in which case you should love technology.
Yeah, except it's slightly useless technology.
Certain machines are lovable. Other machines will cause your demise.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's like Terminator 2 in that way.
Chickens are poison.
That's really the lesson here. Chickens are poison. Anything else about this movie you want to say?
No, I'm glad we finally did it, because I feel like we've joked about it for, like, as long as I've been involved with this side.
Yes, we had to get it out of our system. I had to,
we had to do it.
Revisit it.
It happened. Would you have your kids watch it?
Sure. I mean, they were in the room as I was watching it yesterday, but they were pretty disinterested in it.
I mean, again, it is a lot of just people talking.
Dark, yeah.
G colors.
Right. Again, unless you are captured by some of the weird characters and visuals, like, as a story, I just don't think there's really anything there.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's done. We survived it.
It's done and we survived it. Thank you for talking about this movie with me. I enjoyed our conversation more than I enjoyed rewatching it.
I will, I'll second that. Thanks for having me on again.
Yes. And thank you guys all for listening. As always, you should review, rate, and subscribe in iTunes if you haven't already. Follow us on Twitter. We're at FThisMovie, and you can email us anytime at FThisMoviePodcast@gmail.com. I know there were a couple things we told you guys to mention in the comments. Please do it. I don't remember what it was. It was like, tell us if this is accurate to the books and tell us what other weird, fucked up kids movies we should podcast on, right? Do I have that right?
You do.
Okay, good. See, I'm able to keep track of these things and I didn't even write them down. Anyway, thanks again, Robin. This was fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Bye, guys.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.